Hello, my name is Lisa Falsco of the Alaska World Affairs Council, and it's such a pleasure to have everyone here today for our program in partnership with Alaska Public Media and the Concert Association. This is something a little bit different than what we are normally used to, and we are so excited. I hope you are as well. I was just hearing a few minutes of preview. We have some ilium pipes being warmed up outside. They'll be coming in as well. And we'll have some questions at the end, so please save your questions and wait for the microphone. Today's program is being recorded for radio. So if you could please take a moment to turn off your cell phones. We do like those ringtones, but for our radio listeners at home, it would be preferable to put that on vibrate and just step out if you need to make a phone call. And speaking of recording, this program, as well as other programs, are available at alaskapublic.org, where you can find all previous programs. If you have a hard time finding that, you can also find a link to this program and past programs on our website. We are so excited to announce the winners of the WorldQuest Student Academic Competition, which the World Affairs Council sponsors every year, and that was held this past Saturday. After a two-year winning spree of West High School, a team from Fairbanks came down and just killed them. So we have a group of students, of four, going to Washington, D.C. to participate in the national competition, to be competing on geography, current events, foreign affairs, and they're super excited. Our second team was a homeschooling team from Anchorage, and our third place team was a team from Service High School. So we're excited about that, and all of you who made it possible. And we are also one of the organizations part of Pick, Put, and Give. So if you haven't filled out your permanent fund application yet, or if you have, you can still go back and select Alaska World Affairs Council to pick, click, and give. The funds are once again being generously matched by Cornerstone General Contractors. So let's take the money and take that match. Help us reach our goal of $2,500, which Cornerstone will be matching for us to pick, click, and give. We are a membership organization, so if you aren't currently a member, please consider joining the Alaska World Affairs Council and making all of these programs possible. We've got a lot of great things on our spring lineup. And we'll be back here again due to the Hilton being full with the Rondi events going on the 21st of February, where we will have award-winning Egyptian-American playwright Yusef El-Gwindi, who will be talking about Arabs and Muslims, what Alaskans need to know, and that will be moderated by Alaska Public Media's Steve Levesque. And with that, I'd like to bring up Tori Allen, who is a board member of the Alaska World Affairs Council, formerly head of the OPERA, currently marketing and development director of Alaska Public Media, who will be moderating our program today. Oh, Tori.
Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon, folks. It is my pleasure today to moderate our program with LUNICEF. They are here to speak about globalization in Ireland and give us the LUNICEF perspective. So please join me in welcoming LUNICEF. Thank you. LUNICEF are internationally recognized as being the finest Irish instrumental band of recent times. They are renowned for their constant touring, having performed over 1,500 shows across the globe since the band formed in 1997. They have appeared at internationally renowned venues such as the Hollywood Bowl, the National Concert Hall in Dublin, and the Sydney Opera House. In 2011, they were invited to perform at the White House. LUNICEF's inventive arrangements and bass-driven grooves have steered Irish acoustic music into surprising new territory. Their blend of intelligence, innovation, virtuosity, and passion has brought them to the forefront of Celtic and world music. After their first American visit to sold-out shows and rave reviews, the New York Times wrote, "This is the hottest Irish acoustic group on the planet." And I'd like to, what a treat it is to have you folks here. I'd like to introduce them individually, and then they're going to give a quick performance for us, and then we'll get into the discussion. So we have Sean Smith, fiddles and whistle. Kevin Crawford, flutes and whistles. Trevor Hutchinson, stand-up bass. Killian Melody, Killian Pipes and Whistles, and Ed.
Hello.
Ed.
Yes, Boyd.
Ed's Boyd. And what do you play, Ed?
I play the guitar.
Oh, okay. Okay, so before we go on, is now a good time to let you...
Time. Oh, it's a perfect time.
Okay.
Come on, Tori. Beautiful.
Okay.
Yeah. How are you? Is this on? No. So, Killian here, our piper in the band, is going to give you a little flavor of possibly the most Irish instrument that we have, the Irish pipes, along with the harp, so kind of recognized as being the emblem of Irish music. So this is what they sound like. Hopefully he's not going to let us down now. It's going to be sweet music. But okay, he has let us down. So these are the pipes. I hope you like them.
If we didn't have our established genres, I would label that hypnotic swirl music. Holy moly.
Can we add that to our bio, yeah?
I think we've been led astray. You know, when I grew up and you talked about soul music, you thought of James Brown, but when I hear this, I mean, how can you deny it? This is not soul music. This is soul music.
You're too kind, Tori. Thank you.
Oh, and I love the accent. Oh, there's nothing more fabulous than an Irish accent. So you folks have been busy here in Alaska with gigs in St. Petersburg, Homer, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Valdez. Of course, you like Anchorage the best.
Of course, that goes without saying. But it's nice to have a five-city kind of a stop for this tour. When we were here 7 years ago, I think it was maybe five or six cities we did that time as well, but we're incorporating three new cities to this trip, which is great. Valdez will be new for us, Homer is new, and Petersburg was also a new territory for us to go into. And we had a great time. Lovely.
Great. Well, I recently had the privilege of meeting one of your big fans, Brad Keithley, and Brad put me in touch with Brian O'Donovan, who hosts. Brian O'Donovan is a public media star, and he hosts the Celtic music program from WGBH in Boston, Celtic Sojourn. And so I called up Brian, and I said, Brian, I have this wonderful opportunity here to talk with these folks, and would you have any pointers? And so he gave me some pointers, and I sort of like to kind of kick off the conversation based on the help from Brian. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's a little scary because Brian knows us a little too well, so I'm hoping that he kept things kind of on the straight and narrow.
Okay, well, here we go. So I'd like to read a quote from a recent book, Globalization, Migration, and Social Transformation by Brian Fanning and Rinaldo Monk. And here we go. Up until the 1990s, Irish migration history seemed first and foremost a history of out-migration. Events such as the Great Famines in the 19th century and the economic crisis in the 1980s triggered the out-migration of considerable parts of the Irish population. However, in the mid-1990s, Ireland developed from a long-standing out-migration country to an in-migration country. The speed of the transformation was almost without parallel. In just 15 years, Ireland moved from being Britain's ex-colony on the European periphery to one of the world's leading globalized nations. It drew in large numbers of people from Western and Central Europe, Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Even if the recent financial crisis that started in 2008 brought the country's economic miracle to an end, the boom days have not passed without an impact on the Irish nation. Ireland will not, whatever the outcome of the present crisis, be returning to the largely mono-ethnic order of the past. Migrants have transformed Ireland utterly in terms of economic development, political debate, cultural pluralism, and social diversity. And as we consider this and the concept of globalization, I'd like to ask each of you to share with us your feelings about this.
I mean, I'm a kind of a blow-in myself. I was born in England, so I'm one of the guys that moved in the 90s. But my family and my roots are in Ireland. My parents are both from County Clare, and I moved from the kind of industrial city of Birmingham in the Midlands of England to the west of Ireland, to a very different kind of place altogether. But I went over to Ireland in 1989, and then that kind of influx, if you like, of people coming into the country in the mid-90s. I saw a massive change very quickly, because between 1989 and maybe 1995, Ireland was a very narrow kind of thinking country. It was very much involved in its own kind of history and wasn't really that open-minded about what was going on outside of the country. So when the country went into the boom period and all these people started to come on board, it really opened Ireland's minds and eyes to what really happens around the world. And Ireland has certainly grown, I think, in terms of what it has to offer now because of what these other people coming into the country have contributed, both in terms of cultural differences, just in terms of, like, if you came to Ireland on a simple level prior to the mid-90s, you know, you mightn't have really got good food either. food is a big issue in a band's life, and food in Ireland was not great, but food is very, very good now in Ireland because they've taken on board all of these amazing cultural and like just differences in cuisine from around the world, and we're kind of using that to our advantage now too. But I don't know if the recent kind of downturn is a good thing, because it's kind of made things a little bit more real again. We were kind of living in a cuckoo land scenario whereby, you know, the money thing wasn't really, I don't think, attainable on a long-term level. So people are starting to kind of just do things on a smaller scale again, and people are more community-oriented, and it's going back to basics. And we've certainly taken on board all of the good things that happened in the boom, but we're kind of just being a bit more kind of aware of what the realities are now, too.
Right. And Killian, what are your thoughts about?
I'm one of the people... Am I on?
No.
I'm one of the people that... Hello?
Yeah.
I'm one of the people that migrated out in the 90s. So I moved to New York, and I live in Queens, New York.
Was it on for me?
Yeah.
I think he's just not talking loud.
Is it on then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the battery's down. Yeah, I said I moved out of Ireland in the 90s. I'm an immigrant from Ireland, but I moved to New York City. I live in Queens in New York City, which is, I suppose, one of the most multicultural places probably in the world. And so I think it's a very positive thing what's happening in Ireland. And I go back a lot, and it is a very different country.
You got it.
No, that was that one.
Am I on right?
No.
Green light.
That one was excellent. No?
No.
Yeah.
No. That was this one. Let's try this one.
I was finished down there.
So we can just continue on down the line. We're actually interested in each one, each of them.
Okay, well, I mean, I think one of the things that's it's kind of interesting about Ireland.
No.
This is not really working. I'll just shout. Is that, like, normally I think when you get a big inward migration, it's to the cities. But in Ireland, a lot of it was to rural Ireland. So you get small villages that had big influxes of different nationalities, especially out west, out where you are, Kev, there was a big Brazilian
massive,
population in one town alone. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably quite difficult for some small places to assimilate at first, but I think it's been pretty successful overall.
Outside voice.
Right. It's as loud as I can go.
Look at the far end of the room and talk to
them. Okay. How are you doing? Can you hear me?
Woo-hoo! All right.
You have the magic touch. Don't know about that, but I have to say, but I don't know about all the migration in and out. I think there's an old Irish saying that says that the bigger the highway or the road into an area, the faster that the culture leaves. And that's something that I think I personally think we should try to keep an eye on in Ireland, is just to preserve a little bit and spend a bit of time and attention focusing on what we have, which is our culture and our music and our language. And it's not at the expense of other cultures or music or languages, but I think in the last while so much happened so quick that it's something that's worth preserving is our culture. And a long time ago, especially in some generation ago or two, my father was growing up, certainly music in an area was very much localized, and they played one style and you could tell where somebody came from by the style of the fiddle playing. That's kind of all gone now, that you can't really distinguish as clearly where somebody comes from by the fiddle style. So just in a short period of time, just from a cultural point of view, there has been massive changes in the way that we play music, the type of music we play, how we play with each other, and the perception of what the Irish music is. So there's a lot changing very quickly, and it's still very exciting to be out there and playing to audiences all over the world, because music has now travelled out and it's such a big brand name, Irish music. Like, we've just come from Japan and we're in Alaska and we're on our way to Australia, so that certainly wouldn't have happened in my father's time. So there's lots of pluses and minuses, and it's very exciting.
So I can grab that mic. Mm-hmm. So on that note, do you folks consciously consider yourselves Is it, as musical ambassadors, is it your function to preserve the tradition, or are you actively infusing all of this new input into the music and therefore sending out to the world a new Irish character, a new Ireland?
It depends on what you dwell on, I suppose. Especially from my point of view, it's not something I would be aware of. I'm sort of really thinking music, thinking inside the band, and thinking inside the box a lot of the time, but still aware, like in situations like this, that we are ambassadors for our country and very aware of that. But I don't know how other guys feel about that, but it wouldn't be the first thing on my mind, certainly when I'm trying to represent myself and music and play it as well as possible and make the occasion as good as possible for who is taking the time to come and see us. And I'm very privileged always to stand on the stage with an audience in front of me that has made a great effort to come to see us. And so that's where I get my satisfaction out of it, anyway.
There is a fine line between, you know, again, preserving the music of the past masters and being respectful to that. And a lot of other folk musics that are out there just kind of keep it to that kind of way of thinking. You know, they don't try to add to it, or they don't try to make the tradition, you know, kind of more up to date, or they don't kind of add to it in any way. There's a kind of a paying homage to a tradition. And there's some of that goes on in Irish music, but I think we're very lucky that in Ireland there's more freedom there to add your own kind of voice to it as well, and to you know, kind of try and come up with a different spin and a different take on things and add to the tradition, as opposed to just keeping it as it was 40, 50, 100 years ago. I mean, we all certainly acknowledge the music of the past, and we listen to it regularly, and we keep going back there for inspiration and for tunes and stuff like that. But I think you'd be, I suppose, not genuine to yourself if you just did that. You know, I certainly want to try and put my own stamp on things, and this band was built on that premise that we would try and create a kind of a new platform for melodies within Irish music and other Celtic genres. So that's what we've been doing. We thought when we started out 17 years ago that we were pretty radical and that we were changing the face of Irish music. But now when you look back and you see what we've done, I think we've been quite traditional and respectful to kind of what went on before we started out. And when you see what some of the younger bands are doing today, they're really kind of pushing the boat out, you know, so we feel quite kind of old school compared to what they're doing. But I think you can do both, and we write our own tunes, so we're contributing to the well of tunes all the time, and we just do what we do, and we hope that people like it, really. No?
Yeah. Anyone else, any thoughts? Ed?
Ed isn't saying too much.
I know, he? Ed.
I'm a bit scared of microphones, and you can probably tell who does a lot of the presenting at the gig. and rightly so, because he's brilliant at it. Yeah, I suppose I've possibly been avoiding the mic, because I'm not actually from Ireland myself. I'm from over the water in England. But hopefully I'm an honorary Irishman. Because I've spent 25 years playing music and travelling, spending a lot of time in Ireland, and pretty much devoting my life to playing Irish music. Now, I think the great thing about it is its honesty, and it's a travelling music, because we can just pick up our instruments and play anywhere. We don't need to plug in. But there is a sense of the music evolving. I mean, before Trevor introduced the double bass, I don't think that instrument had ever figured in Irish music. So from that point of view, that Lunasa has added a different soundscape to the music. And I think if people enjoy what they hear, and they can hear the hours of practice and the sense of enjoyment that hopefully we have performing it, then whether it's traditional or modern or evolving, it's as long as it's as was it Louis Armstrong who said there's only two types of music, good and bad. So
very good.
Anyone else? Happy to grab
I think
that.
You're done. You're done going with that question. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So as after my conversation with Brian, I did a little bit of research, and I have to admit, I didn't realize that Ireland is considered the number one globalized nation in the world now. The next question I have for you is: what do you think made that happen? Was it folks like you, musical ambassadors, going around the world, bringing the joy and the magic and the mystery of Ireland to all these folks and infecting them with Irish life? Was it you and Riverdance and the Chieftains? Was it the cumulative effect of all of you folks going around the world, bringing Ireland to the world? Or was it things like tax shelters for businesses? Was it purely economics, or was it a fine mix of both? And in Ireland, is there an awareness of the impact that you are having as musical ambassadors in this globalization?
I think a part of that was goes back a long, long way, because Irish people, I think, have for centuries been travelling out of Ireland, and I think that's been a big part of it, and they have integrated very well in communities all over the world using their culture and the music and dance and all that. So I think when the big cultural revolution started, Celtic revolution with your the likes of Riverdance and the well-known worldwide Celtic phenomenons like that, I think Ireland was in a great place to be recognised. So it really was easy for globalisation in that form to happen. So when I think it was all a cumulative effect, and one thing led to another. But so I think that was part of it.
I mean, I think that's generally what we all think on that. But I mean, there is a kind of a huge regard for Irish people around the world, and we're very lucky that, you know, when you go into, you could be just on our travels, daily travels, we pull in to get lunch somewhere, and God, I love your accent, and you're Irish, and it's like there is this love for Ireland and the people of Ireland, and we're so lucky, like, to kind of ride on the coattails of that. You asked, is it recognised in Ireland the contribution Irish musicians make? No, not at all. It's impossible to try and get that message across. I mean, last year there was an event that took place for the 12 months. It was called The Gathering, and there was a huge amount of advertising and money and everything brought into trying to spread the word of Ireland as being a place to come and visit, and very little emphasis was put on coming to Ireland for the music. Very little emphasis was acknowledged from bands and musicians that travel the world speaking about Ireland and playing the music of Ireland every night, regardless of an event called The Gathering. So that was a little bit of a kick in the teeth, to be honest, for the likes of us. I know, again, a bit like Ed, I grew up in England, and you know, I was certainly reliant on musicians travelling to England, playing music, you know, giving me a sense of what this music was about and the culture as well. I mean, you know, when you listen to a band or a musician playing Irish music, you do get a sense of what the person is about and where they come from and the culture surrounding it. It's not just about the melody. There's a whole story that you're kind of being exposed to at the same time. So, and I know I like to teach. A few of us in the band, we do teaching. I did a workshop here in town last night with flute players. And, you know, it's great to see that our music has been accepted and fallen in love with by loads of people around the world, and sharing it with people is very important. So I see the effect that our music has on people right around the world, whether it's Japan, Australia, America. It's very important.
Great. Thank you. So now you're an instrumental band, and have you ever considered adding vocals?
You do not like what we do.
I love what you do. I'm
just
curious. part of my studies that Brian had recommended, he recommended looking at a TV show from the 60s that was hosted by Pete Seeger. Mm-hmm. And it was the Rainbow Hour or something like that. And he had the Clancy Brothers on, and they were singing. And so I'm just curious, is that something that you folks think about? Will singing be something in the future, or do you prefer to remain purely instrumental?
Do we know where we're going with that one too?
Okay, so when we started out in 97, it was certainly a deliberate move on our part not to have a vocalist in the band. The reasons were kind of twofold. A, we really felt that we wanted to give our particular band a unique sound, and all other Irish bands at that point, or up to that point, had incorporated vocals as well. And there's this kind of format that takes place when you have a vocalist in the band, whereby you have this couple of tunes in a song and a couple of tunes in a song, and it just becomes pretty, you know what's going to happen next type thing. We love melody. We love melodies not just from Ireland. We love other Celtic tunes from other Celtic regions, I should say. And we wanted to incorporate them in the band's arrangements. And by not having a vocalist, it gave us the opportunity to play some of these slightly more alternative pieces where you would possibly have a song if you had a singer in the band. So we've been able to play tunes from Brittany, as was mentioned, Tori mentioned that, and Galicia and Asturias. And we love tunes from the French-Canadian tradition or the all-time American fiddle tradition. And we feel that we can do that because we don't have to make room for a singer. And then the other reason was that most singers in Irish music are female, and our wives and girlfriends forbid us from having any female in the band. So you can decide amongst yourselves which of the reasons carried more weight, but we still don't have a singer in the band. But we have actually worked with singers. Killian Ballily has just worked with a singer you might be familiar with, Bruce Springsteen, our piper. Killian is on Bruce Springsteen's new album. He deserves a round of applause for that. And as a band, we've worked with Natalie Merchant. We've recorded on her last album. We did four or five songs on that with her, and we've worked with a lot of Irish singers as well, and we played on their recordings. We're also talking more about a future album with singers, just to do an album as a concept, just to do an album with singers, because we don't have anything really against songs. Just, we've been doing our own thing with melodies all the time. So I think down the line we will do an album or some kind of a project with singers. So fingers crossed.
What about male singers?
Sorry?
What about male singers?
Mm-hmm. I'd be kind of only joking about the wife. But I mean, we have worked with male singers, and if we do this album that we're speaking about, I think predominantly it would be male singers that we would work with too. So
have we recorded with any male singers today though? Tim O'Brien.
Oh yeah, Tim O'Brien. Do you know Tim O'Brien? He's an amazing singer-songwriter, part of the kind of bluegrass American folk tradition. He's multi-Grammy winning kind of songwriter and stuff. We've toured with Tim and recorded with Tim O'Brien, so he'd certainly be in the pack. So yeah, like that.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think now might be a good time to open it up for some more questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have a mic coming right to you.
Hopefully. Okay. Are we on? Here we go again. It's rather obvious to me that in America, the greatest part of the Irish culture is recognized as its music.
Thank you.
But when you are home in Ireland, is that the case? Because the influx of immigration will obviously change the mix, and there's a possibility a lot of the local culture will diminish.
That's a great question. I think that we have a thing in traditional music that helps us preserve our traditional music in Ireland. It's called the session, and it's something that's very local, and it's a lot of the traditional music playing public would have access to their local session, and that's where they go to play music with each other and be informal, and it's where they learn tunes, and it's where they pick up other influences, and that is a very, very strategic part of our traditional music and where we and how healthy it is at home. And thankfully, with all the recent migrations in and out, that hasn't changed too much, that is still a very, very strong aspect of our local music playing public, and long may that continue. As long as that continues, I think the traditional music is very safe and sound, and I'm glad to report that there's great up and coming musicians, and the scene is very, very healthy.
I'd say in that is that over the last 20 years, the music has only gone from strength to strength. The numbers of children and adults learning the music has increased. And my parents are teachers, and their club, I think, has increased its kind of a music school. It's probably increased fivefold in the exact period that the country's become more multicultural. So I don't think that's a danger at all to traditional music. I suppose the battle always in Ireland is within Irish people themselves. If you went to school when we were all younger, you probably would be maybe the only person in your class that played traditional music, or maybe one other person. A lot of people would have sort of laughed at you or made fun of the music. And certainly, talking about recognition, it's always been a sort of a fight for people to kind of get traditional music put on par with other arts. There's always been a tendency to sort of fund art music or kind of orchestral music or opera, or even there was a period in Ireland where there would be a lot of money spent on bringing opera and ballet and orchestras from all over the world in, but to get funding to run a traditional music concert or run a school of music with it was almost impossible. So I think there's almost two separate things going on. You're sort of fighting for recognition for the music within Ireland, and then the multiculturalism doesn't really affect that.
Do you think the nature of the instruments have a lot to do with maintaining that recognition?
What do you mean?
The kind of instruments you play.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the unique instruments help to keep it unique. There's no real replacement for the pipes. The fiddle obviously is used in every single music, guitar, and it's been part of Irish music probably for 40 years now, 40 or 50 years now. It's used in every type of music, but I think, there's huge numbers of kids learning pipes, and banjo and accordion have kind of become two of the strongest instruments in the last 30 years. Children are learning Irish music. I've lived here for a long time, a lot of people learn the violin and the play lots of different styles. They'll play Irish music, they'll play American music, they'll play classical, they'll play rock and roll. In Irish, a lot of kids just learn Irish traditional music on that instrument. They can't actually play anything else. It's a very kind of straightforward teach. There's teachers, there's schools, that's very strong. We did a few trips around the country where we were kind of doing residencies and stuff, and there's huge numbers of teachers that have enormous classes in villages all over the kind of Midlands of Ireland. And, you know, one friend of Kevin's told me he was teaching 90 kids the concertina in County Clare. You know, it's sort of, so I don't think there's any danger of from multiculturalism or from anything else in terms of the long-term sort of strength of the music.
I have a question that's actually very similar to this. Was in Ireland twice over the last 2 years. My daughter grew up learning Irish fiddle here in Anchorage, and I was wondering, you know, how popular Irish music really was in Ireland. And at least where I went, it seemed to be very popular, both for the younger folks and the older. And that was very gratifying to me. Sort of in the West Coast and up in Donegal, very, very popular. Really a lot of great places to go out and get Irish music, and it wasn't just a tourist thing. You could just go in with the locals, and it was really cool. But sort of a different question, I guess I've got to ask a different one now. When I visited in the last 2 years, we have relatives up in Donegal, a lot of people are immigrating again, a lot of the younger people, and a lot of the better educated people. But despite the huge number of folks in the United States with Irish ancestry, it's kind of a small data set, but talking to my relatives there, you know, their sons or daughters have moved to Canada or Australia, or they're an electrician or an engineer in the Gulf States. I just didn't hear people saying they're coming to the States anymore. And I think our immigration laws are very restrictive. And I'm just talking with, you know, a few number of families. But I was sort of wondering what your take was and what you see young Irish people immigrating to now. Is it the States? Do I just have a bad data set? Or where do you see the younger people going?
Yeah, there's the depth. As I say, I live in Queens in New York. It was one of the hopes of the Irish immigrants. It's a lot harder to emigrate now. So they aren't coming to New York. A lot of people are definitely going to Canada. There's a more open policy there. A lot of people are going to Australia. And then, of course, England. There's never a restriction on Irish people traveling and working in England, so huge numbers are going to England. You know? I mean, it'll affect the music in a certain way, but people that are already playing the music tend to take the music with them. And you know, when they go, a lot of people certainly that play or try to emigrate to a place that has music. Like London is a very strong scene, like from Boston, New York, and
Anchorage.
Even Anchorage. We hear there were 16 flute players here yesterday, so somebody must have emigrated here about 25 years ago for that to be a reality. But the music, I suppose. There's easier access, you know, people are. When we were younger, to have got your hands on a video of somebody playing was quite a big deal. You know, people would have passed around the odd video of seeing some of the famous people play, but now, at the flip of a switch, you can watch videos of any Irish music, any band, any musician you've ever heard of, you can watch them play online, and you can listen to the records, and you don't have to go and find a shop that has the CDs for sale or whatever. So I think that helps people when they're far away.
Okay. All right. Well, this has really been informative, and I guess we'll wrap it up right now and bring Lisa back up. I'd just like to thank the Concert Association for bringing you folks up, for having the brightness to bring you folks up. Without further ado.
Just a couple words on this microphone. Sorry for all the problems we've had today. I think we learned that next time when we come back, we are going to rent the entire microphone and speaker system. So we promise that will be a lot better next time. And
I would like to bring up Jason from the Concert Association here to do something. He's going to talk about tonight's program, Future on Site, and he has promised to give away some tickets. So, Jason.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
I'm trying to remember how I got these guys in front of me. It was about 7 years ago when I was in Fairbanks. I used to work up at Fairbanks at the Concert Association up there, and we took surveys. We'd ask people, oh, what groups would you like to see? And I had just been to my, I think it was my first conference ever, and I had all the stack of papers, and one of the surveys said, this group, Lunasa. I looked over through my stack of papers, and, well, lo and behold, here was a one-page sheet on the group, Lunasa. I thought, what the heck? Let's just give this a shot. And it was so exciting because, you know, in Fairbanks, it's never easy to sell tickets to shows anywhere. But in Fairbanks, it's also very hard. And these guys nearly sold out. The good news was it was St. Patrick's Day. I think that they played up in Fairbanks. But ever since, I've been dying to get them to come back to Alaska because they are such wonderful ambassadors. And in Celtic music in Alaska, I don't know what it is. It's one of the easiest sells that we have. You know, we brought the likes of Eileen Ivers up, Cherish the Ladies, Leahy. We've had just wonderful groups, and Solus is another great band. I'm sure you've worked with a lot of these people. And so I love bringing Celtic music, because the other thing about Celtic musicians is they are some of the most generous musicians that I've ever seen from the stage. They're the ones who actually take the time to thank the hosts, which I love. I mean, because they need to be thanked. But it really shows the person of the band in a way that lots of other groups just don't quite do in the same way. So I love having you guys come up here. So thanks so much for coming all the way up here again. And tonight's concert will be wonderful. You aren't going to want to miss it. You just got a little bit of a taste of it tonight. But we have a few tickets available left over. And the show is at 7:30. And so you're not going to want to miss it, because you'll walk away very happy, feeling really good. So we are going to give away a pair of tickets to the show tonight, right? That's And they don't tell me, they just said get up there and do this. So let me grab a number out of here. And the number is 843. Ticket number 843, last three digits. All right.
Hey.
You're the winner. Come on up.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I've never
been
anything.
Good lucky day.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well, hope to see many of you guys at the show tonight.
Thank you. Thanks, Jason.
I'd like to thank Jason. This is kind of our kickoff for our World Music Festival, so please stay tuned for more of this. In April, we're going to be featuring another group that the Concert Association is bringing, International Blues Express. And with Alaska Public Media, we're going to have a day full of local artists showing off some world music here in Alaska. So stay tuned for more of this fabulous podcast. Partnership, and we'll see you on the 21st.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.